What does quiet confidence look like when someone fires a question at you in a meeting and all the eyes turn to you? Do you scramble for the first thing that comes to your mind? Or do you hold the pause and say, "That's going to take some time. Let me come back to you tomorrow or in a couple days with an answer you can actually use"? Welcome to The Introverted Leader. It's a podcast helping introverted leaders embrace your underrated quiet strengths so you can get promoted and start earning what you deserve. I'm Greg Weinger. I have over 25 years of leadership experience, and yes, I am an introvert. My guest today is Dr. David Hooper. He's an entrepreneur, an AI consultant, and an ultra-marathon runner. He's an introvert who's built his career and his company by leaning into his quiet strengths. His business, Lunala, is named after the three pillars in his life, his dog Luna, his cat Arwen, and his wife Laura. This tells you a bit about how he leads. David shares in this episode about a rock bottom moment that has reshaped his life. And what came out on the other side was a very clear-eyed sense of purpose. In this episode, you'll learn, number one, how to make your impact visible at work through outcome storytelling so you get the opportunities and attract the clients that you want. Number two, how to use AI as a thinking partner for daily reflection so your best ideas don't stay trapped in your head. And number three, why, let me get back to you on that, is one of the most powerful phrases a quiet leader can own. So let's get into it. All right, David, fantastic to have you on the show today. Welcome.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Greg. Really looking forward to getting into this.
Awesome. Well, I have to ask you the question I ask everybody when they first get on the show. Do you consider yourself an introvert or extrovert?
I can say without a doubt that I am an introvert. That is for certain. I've always been quite quiet, but I played in sports teams and I was always a leader and loud on the pitch, but very quiet off it. And it wasn't until I was a little bit older, my kind of 20s, I kind of thought about how I like to spend time and recharge and where I get my energy from, that I kind of thought, oh, maybe, you know, I see more alignment with introvert than extrovert. The common misconception when it comes to introverts is that we...
Brought to you by the Capital One Saver Card. With Saver, you earn unlimited 3% cash back on dining, entertainment, and at grocery stores. That's unlimited cash back on ordering takeout from home, or unlimited cash back on tickets to concerts and games. So grab a bite, grab a seat, and earn unlimited 3% cash back with the Saver Card. Capital One, what's in your wallet? Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Don't have confidence or the ability to lead when that just simply isn't the case. You know, I've been in different situations where the loudest and most confident, shall we say, are perhaps not the greatest leaders. So, yeah, I think when I look at my own kind of strengths and weaknesses, I always bring it back to not kind of putting myself in a box. So, you know, just because certain people label us as introverts and say, you know, you have to stay in that corner. Well, actually, you know, we can break out of those boxes and lead teams just as well, be confident in the exact same situation. Don't allow any label to put you in a box. You can go and do whatever you like, no matter what anybody kind of labels you.
Right. And it's a helpful recognition, but really, ultimately, you want to not be hemmed in by any kind of label. Can you take us back to kind of the pivotal moment in your life, in your career, what was going on, and, you know, how did that put you on your current path?
Yeah, so I had a big moment in my life around 2017 when I worked and worked to get a job that I really, really wanted. My whole career had been pointed at this job. I got that job, and then about a year into that contract, I was made redundant. And that just sent me on this incredible spiral of self-destruction. I just locked myself in the house, started eating. I put on around 80 pounds of fat. in about 6 months, and I was officially labelled as morbidly obese, and I was also diagnosed with depression at that point as well, and medicated for clinical depression. And for about 6 months, I wouldn't leave the house, morbidly obese, clinically depressed, redundant, and really, I wasn't going anywhere. You know, I was really in this spiral of despair, and we were sitting around the Christmas table, and the shirt that I was wearing was so tight when I was trying to eat my Christmas dinner that I thought the buttons were going to ping off and go into my father-in-law's meal. I had to excuse myself and go and get changed. And that was a real rock bottom moment where I kind of was looking in the mirror and thinking, you know, you've put 80 pounds of fat on, you've been diagnosed with depression, you've been made redundant, and now you've had to go and get changed because the clothes you're wearing are so tight, you can barely function. And that was a real painful moment where I kind of took a few deep breaths, wiped the tears away from my eyes, put a big t-shirt on and got a little bit more comfortable, went back to the dinner table, got through Christmas and into the new year, but really made it a point of attacking 2018 at that point with everything I had. So I started to look into mindset and mindfulness and really reframed a lot of the things that were going on in my life. So I had those three areas. I had morbid obesity, redundancy, and clinical depression. And I tried to reframe those things. So the first one, morbid obesity, I had 80 pounds of fat to lose. I saw that as an opportunity to reshape my body and rediscover athleticism that I had in my youth. I saw my redundancy as an opportunity to become an entrepreneur and start my first business. And the last one, depression, I saw that as an opportunity to really refine and refined my purpose and what really made me fulfilled and happy, because I wasn't happy. And over the next 6-7 months, I really got to work. So I lost 80 pounds and became an ultramarathon runner. Mm. I really figured out what made me happy. And there's a great little story that I'll just jump into. I was having these thoughts. It was around the 2nd of January. And I was thinking, you know, I want to be buying a big house. I want to drive a fancy car and have a fancy watch. And I don't know why, but I was perched on my staircase. And we've got a dog and we've got a cat, a little dog called, a German Shepherd called Luna, and a little black cat called Arwen. And for absolutely no reason at all, Arwen, my little black cat, came and found me and lay on my chest. And Luna came to the bottom of the stairs and kind of put her head on my foot exactly while I was having these thoughts. And it was like a bolt of lightning went through me. And I thought, hold on, I'm thinking I need big house, fancy watch, fancy car to feel fulfilled, when these two little creatures have come, found me, given me comfort. My wife, Laura, as well. If I have a bad day, I've still got those three pillars. You know, if I was picked up and put in a field in a tent with these three, life would be still absolutely mm-hmm. incredible. And I'm so, so fortunate. So I was able over that 6 month period to re-find this purpose and this fulfillment. And it was a really beautiful moment. And then the last aspect was starting my first business at the end of that kind of 6 month process as well. So it was, yeah, a real challenging period. But now I look back and it's shaped me into kind of what I've gone on to achieve. I'm really kind of almost grateful for that period now.
Well, thank you for sharing that. There's so much in there. I've written about rock bottom moments, not from the perspective of a treatment program, but I think that there's a commonality of that journey, that path, where there has to be some kind of moment where you know it's the rock bottom for you, whatever it is for you, and this is just not acceptable. And giving in to that, and it's like, okay, well, I'm going to do whatever it is that I need to do to change from here.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And the moment I had it, those moments around the Christmas table where there wasn't really another way to go. It was so painful, and it was so raw, and it was just that feeling of, right, you know, now I'm in a place I can go and start to take a couple of steps in the right direction. And that, to anybody who's listening, is genuinely how this started. So it was kind of the 2nd of January, and I was 80 pounds overweight, and I said, right, I'm going to go out and I'm going to run 5 miles. And I opened the door, ran for approximately 45 seconds and broke down. And I thought, you know, I can't do this. There's no way I can do this. And I know it was about 100 yards from my house because I could still see our garden gate. And I walked back to the house and I stood at the garden gate and I said, if you go in the house, you're probably going to eat and comfort yourself like you've been doing for the past 6 or 7 months. So I walked for about 20 minutes and then came back. But that was the start of that journey of building a little bit of mental toughness, of getting some exercise. But I pictured myself going and running 5 miles and being this athlete immediately, when actually it was, I just needed a tiny little step just to start to push the ball in the right direction.
I love that. I want to linger on your story too of you know, your dog and your cat. There's something incredibly touching to me about that. These creatures are present here, and pets can be such teachers for us, you know, about what really matters.
Yes, Greg, I am so in line with exactly what you've just said. The thing that I always come back to was a lovely kind of statement that hit me. It was something like, and I'm paraphrasing, it was something like, for 10 to 20 years, your pet is in your life, but you are the whole of your pet's life. And that to me just was really powerful when it comes to, you know, appreciating them and partnering with them and loving them. And so much so, my business is called Lunala, and that's actually a combination of all of my three pillars. So Lunala is Lunala, Arwin, and Laura, which is my wife. And they really do play such an important part. And, you know, I'm so grateful because Luna, especially, there is times where I've got anxiety as well, where I would be kind of really having a panic attack on the floor, and Luna would come over and lean against me and cuddle me. Or, you know, she obviously doesn't quite know what's going on, but she knew that there was comfort needed, which was really appreciated. So yeah, they're a huge, huge part of my life and what I, yeah, always kind of think about. It just draws me back, it anchors me. And yeah, that relationship is and bond is so special.
Oh, so that helped ground you, and you evolved into a sense of purpose and direction, and your business grew out of that. Tell us a little bit about sort of ultra marathoning.
It's a fascinating discipline. And to be honest, a lot of us say it's just like a big picnic, a long picnic, you know, a 24-hour picnic where we're eating every hour or so. But the reason I was interested in ultra marathon running was because I come from this really quite challenging place. And thankfully, it'd come out the other side. I got in great shape. You know, I went from the worst shape of my life to the best, really fit and strong. And I just always want to push the boundaries. So I'm incredibly ambitious. And there's a bit of a pattern in my career where I've had a big setback and then I've tried to go the other way. So, for example, I failed all of my A-levels at school. And then I tried to fix that or prove to myself that I could go and actually learn and educate myself. I went and did a PhD. And it was similar with the ultramarathon side. I'd been in such a dark place, unable to walk or run 5 miles. I got to this point where I was running regularly, enjoying it. And it was just that moment of, how far can we go with this? Why not? Why not have a go at this? And it was super exciting. It was some great experiences. And it really makes you appreciate or actually gives you the opportunity to find out a little bit more about yourself. So what do you do at 30 miles or 50 miles or 70 miles? When it's incredibly painful, you're tired, sleep deprived, probably hungry, had too many sports gels, dreaming of that that pizza or whatever you're thinking about at the end of the race. And it's at those moments, that mental toughness, that discipline where you keep putting that one foot in front of the other. That to me was this kind of sick, almost twisted opportunity to find that out about myself in a way.
Yeah, and there's a continuity there between, you know, you're coming back to the house and, you know, there's that decision point. Am I going in to comfort myself or, you know, I'm going to do what part of me really knows I should do. You become an explorer at the boundaries of what you think you can do. And there's kind of a lovely lesson in that where we have boundaries all the time that we set for ourselves. It goes back to the labels we talked about. What is the mental idea that is holding you back from doing this idea that part of you has that, what if we could do that?
Yeah, it's such a great point, Greg. And it's something that I've battled with a lot in my own life. And I think that's why now, at a slightly older age, I do try and always push these boundaries and take these risks and have a go at these different things and always try and bring an open mind to the conversation. I grew up in a very education-focused household, so it was very much school's the most important thing, and then university's the most important thing, and then a career in education is the most important thing. Both my parents were teachers. You know, if I wanted to start a business, you know, why do you want to do that? Or, oh, you want to go and run an ultramarathon? Why would you do that? You know, you don't need to. Let's keep it safe. Let's keep it safe and simple. And I think that brings us back to the labels. You have the power to break out of those labels and to break out of the hold that others may have on you. It's always your decision that you can make. Whatever the challenge is that you're interested in facing, it really does come down to you. And another thing that I always come back to as well is I never wanted to have regrets. So when I'm 80, I never wanted to look back and go, I wish I'd got in great shape when I was in a position to go and run an ultramarathon. Or I wish I'd lost the weight earlier so I could enjoy time with my niece and nephew. Those types of thoughts really, really drive me. And that's really what keeps me driven.
Yeah. So we have on the one side dreams and not wanting to have regrets. And on the other side is making sure there's enough self-understanding, self-compassion. Your pillars, the people you care about, are, in a sense, they were what helped give you some self-compassion about that. They're grounding you in a purpose. How do you balance, yeah, you can do this, you know, break through the barriers. How do you prevent that from tipping over into punishing yourself?
That is very difficult. And it's not something I have particularly mastered. I think my wife's a great critical friend for that. You know, she'll ask great questions. She'll challenge me. She'll say, you know, well, is this the right time? Or have you thought about X, Y, and Z? So trying to find someone to help with that process and say, this is what happened, and have somebody else say, well, you've ignored 60, 70, 80% of the really good stuff you've done, and you're focusing on the 10, 20% that you're not doing. And, you know, just having that opportunity to lighten the load, and whether that's journaling, whether it's voice noting yourself, I just think getting those thoughts out your head, that really helps me.
So you, in your business, you talk a lot about AI. And what are some of the ways that you see that this can be helpful for people who are interested in leadership? And, you know, how could it be helpful for introverts?
So if you think about a very, very quick history, roughly in the 1800s, there was a huge technological advancement with the tractor. Everybody working on farms and in agriculture had a big panic and thought, what am I going to do? You know, my job's been taken. How am I going to put food on the table? So that was a big shock to the system. We then had a big technological advancement roughly in the 1970s, 1980s. And my dad actually came home with a big briefcase, and he was in a real grump. And he said to my mum, you'll never guess what my boss has said I've got to learn over the next couple of weeks. And she said, I don't know what's in the briefcase. And he opened the briefcase, and what was in there was one of the first ever laptops. And he said, I've been told I've got to learn how to use this laptop. I like to ring people and I like to write letters. I don't know why I need this. So again, it was a big shock to the system, big technological advancement. And then if we fast forward ever so slightly to the early 2000s, four guys got together in a US dorm room. One of them said, I want to take a picture of my breakfast and I want to put it on the internet. Facebook was born. And again, that was a huge shock to the system. And we're now at that same stage with AI. Will it take our jobs? What will happen? But if history tells us anything, it's that we will adapt. In 5 years, none of us will be having these thoughts. It'll be integrated into our lives. So the first thing I would say to leaders is that this is a real opportunity for you to show leadership and embrace AI, because this has to be a top-down approach. You have to be the leader. You have to be the one using AI, knowing about AI, implementing AI, because then everybody else who you are leading, who is worried, scared about their job, unsure, they will be comforted and go, okay, if our leader is thinking about this, then maybe I should. So that would be the first part. The second part would be, this really isn't going away. So if you think about the speed at which AI is developing, it's much better to get on board and have a go at this point compared to in 5 years' time, where who knows what it might be like. And then the third and last part, which is really exciting, and one of the reasons I got involved in AI initially, was how this affects, or could positively affect, introverts. Now, we've just spent 5-10 minutes talking about reflection and me talking to the dog, me talking to my wife. I now pair with AI on a regular basis, and AI for an introvert is, to me, it's a dream. So I can have conversations when I have isolated myself, which I like to do. You know, I like to be by myself, but I can still have reflective conversations and be asked questions and be stimulated in that way. But also, if I put a kind of comedic slant on this, when I think about interacting with people, quite honestly, you know, I don't love having phone calls or ringing restaurants or those types of interactions. When I think about I could speak to an AI to book a restaurant, I'd be more likely to do it. For me, as an introvert, it's a real positive.
There's some really great pieces of advice in there. Getting in, getting familiar kind of demystifies it. I think if you are kind of shutting your mind to it and keeping it at arm's length, then it can get scarier. This is a tool, an amazing tool, and it is an incredibly powerful tool. And if you're creative about how you use it and where you use it and incorporating it into different parts of your life, then it's just going to strengthen the best parts of you. What are the things that are most me, you know, that are most unique to me? And, you know, what are some of the things that it can be just a huge relief? I don't have to do that anymore.
What are the tasks that you enjoy doing? What are the things that you'd rather somebody else would do? Are they repetitive? Could AI do them for you to free up more of the creative stuff that us as introverts, you know, we love that big picture thinking, the strategy, the exciting plans, all of that really exciting stuff. And if there's more time to do that, fantastic. And even better, if there is an opportunity for AI to help lighten the load so I can spend more time in the hills with Luna, walking her, or getting home for my niece or nephew's rehearsals or plays or dances or sports games, you know, that to me is, it's really, really exciting. And that one of the key things when I started to talk about AI in that sense at a couple of conferences, and you could see busy executives think, oh, okay, so instead of replying to 150 emails at 5 p.m. till 8 p.m., I could have AI write some drafts for me, get them done in half an hour, be home for my daughter's soccer game, something like that. Mm-hmm. So once you spend 20 hours of time on ChatGPT or Perplexity or Claude, once you spend 20 hours experimenting and starting to scratch at the surface of AI, you quickly realize that, oh, actually, it's just a tool that I can use and it can help me do X, Y, and Z. I can't tell you how many times I've had someone message me or come up to me and said, you know what, I did that the 20 hours and now I use AI all the time. It's great. So it's just engage with it, have a little taste of it, dip your toe in and break that kind of glass ceiling of I'm terrified of this, I'm worried, I'm not going to engage with it.
Yeah, I think once you've found that one task that has been compressed from 30, 40 minutes into 5 minutes, you know, it unlocks everything. You're like, okay, I've already saved more time than I've invested. You've probably saved more than the 20 hours that you invest in it. I love what you drew out there, that this is almost another dream for introverts because it's interacting on your own terms.
Completely right. And that to me is where my mental health suffers if I don't incorporate that into my day. So if I go and just keep all of these thoughts to myself and, you know, I get home grumpy, quiet, not my best self. But now I do partner with AI and reflect with AI and ask AI to challenge my thinking. It's just been such a big help. So partnering, not replacing, and allowing AI to tempt your brilliant thoughts out, because every introvert's brilliant, tempt those thoughts out, organize them, and then we can actually do something with them.
One of the things I talk about on the podcast is that because we're internal, we're thinking and we have this rich internal life, we aren't always skilled at bringing that out into the world. We're not skilled at sharing. We don't share our thought process. We show up with, you know, presenting the conclusion and we haven't brought people along, which is super important as a leader. Maybe the discipline of bringing out your thoughts or sharing your thoughts more, AIs could be supportive in that way.
That's so true. Just that, the pointy end of this. So, you know, let's say a book, for example. Under no circumstances should an AI write your book for you. But what it can do is it can map out bullet point forms, and it just sets you up for a much easier win, and it just organizes the thoughts so you can just move a lot quicker.
So I want to get to some practical things that people can take away and try. And one area which is often a challenge for quieter people is we'll have accomplishments, but we don't necessarily talk about it. You know, our contributions can go underrecognized compared to people who are just naturally out there promoting themselves. So what are some things that introverted, quieter leaders can do to have more visibility?
Yeah, it's a really interesting one. I don't want to come across as arrogant. I used to introduce myself as not having an ego. I was really protecting myself, I think, when it comes to how I was trying to go about my work. But in reality, I now try and lead through example. It's always about the impact. So I would always try and bring my projects to life, whether it was through having certain metrics or ROIs so that they were really impactful. And suddenly somebody who's very senior saw the impact of that project and they want to know what you did. So you're kind of forced to almost talk about your practices, which again, very, very uncomfortable for us introverts a lot of the time. It's also just around helping. The quickest way I found to rise to the top was to actually care about people and to actually try and help them. You know, you can tell when somebody's being inauthentic and are playing the professional game. And to me, the way to get around that was to actually take an interest in the people who I was working with, actively ask them if I could help them, if they wanted to go for a coffee, if I could impact them in a positive way, without expecting anything back in return. And those simple things, well, maybe they're not that simple, make a huge difference. And the second thing, which is really challenging for us as introverts, was developing the ability to say no and stand up for yourself, whether you're being asked to do too much or if you're asked to give a point in a meeting and our thought process hasn't caught up yet. Having the ability to say, no, actually, I've got too much on my plate at the moment, that is an incredibly powerful skill to have. But also, if you do get asked a direct question in a meeting, having the courage to say, you know what, it's a really great question, and I'm going to think about that to give you a better answer, and I'm going to come back to you in the next half a day or a day or whatever it is, shows a lot. You don't have to be the loudest in the room to be the best leader. So they're just some of the things I always try to do.
That's really great stuff in here, you know, telling the story of the impact. It doesn't even have to be beating your chest in a meeting or pounding the table. You're just putting that out there and people will see that, and you're in a sense letting your work speak for itself, but you're taking action to make sure it does get seen. I call it the quiet influence network. You're building a network of one-on-one relationships, which are super high value because they're grounded in service. It's a genuine, authentic, caring relationship and helping others. And then inevitably, when you have something that you need, people feel the same way about you.
I completely believe that truly. And I think that is one of the reasons that I've been able to kind of go and build a business outside of work. That network that you talk about was the one thing that's changed my life when it came to building the business. I always would have one-on-one coffees with people. That was my thing. So when I hear other business owners talking about, you know, I'm trying to get a lead, or, you know, how do you get leads and all these different things. When I started Lunala, I didn't think that. I just thought every month I'm going to try and have a coffee with someone, whether it's virtual or in person. And I'm just going to try and build real relationships with people. And if they work with us, great. If they don't, they might know someone who eventually does. But it was all about going back to those kind of core traits of actually taking an interest in real people. So for those introverts listening who worry about that aspect, if you suddenly switch the mindset from, oh, I need to get 20 leads for my business this month, I need to cold call 500 people. If you change that to, well, I'm going to offer 20 people for a cup of coffee, suddenly it becomes a lot easier and a lot more manageable. And as introverts, certainly for me, I said, oh, well, I like coffee. I like deep conversations. Let's see how that goes.
Yeah, I like it. I want to touch on one bit of advice just in terms of mindset. Is there one thing people could take away from your experience with ultra marathons?
You are always able to take that extra step. You are at 40% capacity when you're exhausted. And that really, really brought it back for me when I read that. When your brain is saying, you give up, this is too hard, you can take that extra step. Whether it's a 5K, a 3K, a 10K, it's a fitness journey, whether it's a business that you haven't made a sale in your first 11 months, whether it's a piece of study, degree, master's, PhD, whatever it is, the same thing flies across all of those different things. There's always more to give. You just have to remember why you're doing these things, why you started them, and how amazing it will be when you finish them. Yeah, when you're exhausted, you still got 60% left to give.
Thanks so much for sharing all of your thoughts and your wisdom, David. I really appreciate you being here. If listeners want to learn more about you and the work you do, where should they go?
So the best place to go is LinkedIn. So it's Dr. David Hooper on LinkedIn. And if anybody wants to find out about what I do, the website's lunala.co.uk. And feel free to send me a DM about anything we've talked about today. I'd love to have coffee if anyone wants a coffee.
Thanks so much for being here, David.
Thanks so much for having me, Greg. Take care.
All right. Here's a few things that I'm taking away from this conversation with David. Number one, use AI as a thinking partner, not to replace your original thoughts. It can't do that, but to draw it out. As introverts, we do some of our best work internally. And a lot of times these great thoughts just stay stuck in our head and never make their way out into the world. AI gives you a way to externalize these thoughts, to reflect, organize, and actually move on them and start taking action. Verbalizing is the first step out of your head and into the real world. Number two, let your impact do the talking. You don't have to pound the table to get attention on your contributions or to get ahead. Just start talking about your measurable outcomes. Put numbers to what you've done. The people who matter will come back and ask, how did you do that? And number three, claim your space. David's advice about saying, that's a great question, let me come back to you with a better answer, is really about claiming the time that you need to do your best thinking. It's a must-have tool in every introvert's toolkit. If this episode resonated with you, the best thing you can do now is to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. I'm Greg Weinger. Keep leading with quiet confidence, and I'll see you next time.